Chapter 2, The Sources of Happiness.
Although it is possible to achieve happiness, happiness is not a simple thing. There are many levels. In Buddhism, for instance, there is a reference to the four factors of fulfillment: wealth, worldly satisfaction, spirituality, and enlightenment. Together, they embrace the totality of an individual's quest for happiness.
Studies have revealed what is most often borne out by our personal experience. Happiness is determined more by one's state of mind than external events. Success may result in a temporary feeling of elation, or tragedy may result in a period of depression, but sooner or later, our overall level of happiness migrates back to a certain baseline. So, if we tend to return to our characteristic baseline level of happiness, no matter what our external conditions are, what determines this baseline? And more importantly, can it be modified, set at a higher level?
Let us leave aside for a moment ultimate religious or spiritual aspirations like perfection and enlightenment, and deal with joy and happiness as we understand them in an everyday or worldly sense. Within this context, there are certain key elements which we conventionally acknowledge as contributing to joy and happiness. For example, good health, the wealth that we accumulate, friendship or companions. We all recognize that in order to enjoy a fulfilled life, we need a circle of friends with whom we can relate emotionally and trust. Now, all these factors are, in fact, sources of happiness. But in order for an individual to be able to fully utilize them, your state of mind is key. It's crucial. If we utilize our favorable circumstances, such as our good health or wealth, in positive ways, in helping others, they can be contributory factors in achieving a happier life. And of course, we enjoy these things. But without the right mental attitude, without attention to the mental factor, these things have very little impact on our long-term feelings of happiness. For example, if you harbor hateful thoughts or intense anger somewhere deep down, then it ruins your health. Also, if one is mentally unhappy or frustrated, then physical comfort is not of much help. On the other hand, if you can maintain a calm, peaceful state of mind, then you can be a very happy person even if you have poor health, or even if you have wonderful possessions. When you are in an intense moment of anger or hatred, you feel like breaking them. At that moment, your possessions mean nothing. Today, there are societies that are very developed materially. Yet among them, there are many people who are not very happy. Just underneath the beautiful surface of affluence, there is a kind of mental unrest leading to frustration, unnecessary quarrels, reliance on drugs or alcohol, and in the worst case, suicide. So there is no guarantee that wealth alone can give you the joy or fulfillment you are seeking. The same can be said of your friends. When you are in an intense state of anger or hatred, even a very close friend appears to you as cold or distant. All of this indicates the tremendous influence that the mental state, the mind factor, has on one's experience of daily life. Naturally, then, we have to take that factor very seriously.
While social, material, and possibly even genetic factors may play a role in happiness, there is general agreement among modern behavioral scientists that whether we are feeling happy or unhappy at any given moment is largely determined by our outlook. Surveys and studies have shown that once our basic survival needs are met, our level of life satisfaction often has little to do with our absolute conditions, but rather with how we perceive our situation, how satisfied we are with what we have. And, as the Dalai Lama notes, our outlook can be modified by deliberately developing an inner compassion and serenity that is unaffected by changes in material circumstances.
So, leaving aside the perspective of spiritual practice in terms of our enjoying a happy day-to-day existence, the greater the calmness of your mind, the greater your peace of mind, the greater your ability to enjoy a happy and joyful life. I should mention that when we speak of a calm state of mind or peace of mind, we shouldn't confuse that with a totally insensitive, apathetic state of mind. Having a calm or peaceful state of mind doesn't mean being totally spaced out or completely empty. Genuine peace of mind is rooted in affection and compassion. There is a very high level of sensitivity and feeling there. As long as there is a lack of the inner discipline which brings calmness of mind, no matter what external facilities you have, they will never give you the feeling of joy and happiness that you are seeking. On the other hand, if you possess this inner quality, a calmness of mind, a degree of stability within, then even if you lack various external facilities that you would normally consider necessary for happiness, it is still possible to live a happy and joyful life.
Though the Dalai Lama's words resonated with me, Western culture is to a considerable extent based on material acquisition, and our feelings of contentment are strongly influenced by a tendency to compare ourselves unfavorably with others and to continually long for more than we have.
I think there are two kinds of desire. Certain desires are positive. A desire for happiness, it's absolutely right. The desire for peace, the desire for a more harmonious world. Certain desires are very useful. But at some point, desires can become unreasonable. That usually leads to trouble. Now, for example, sometimes I visit supermarkets. I really love to see supermarkets because I can see so many beautiful things. So when I look at all these different articles, I develop a feeling of desire, and my initial impulse might be, oh, I want this, I want that. Then the second thought that arises, I ask myself, oh, do I really need this? The answer is usually no. If you follow after that initial impulse, then very soon your pockets will empty. However, the other level of desire based on one's essential needs for food, clothing, and shelter is something more reasonable. Now, a feeling of self-satisfaction alone cannot determine if a desire or action is positive or negative. A murderer may have a feeling of satisfaction at the time he is committing the murder, but that doesn't justify the act. All the non-virtuous actions, lying, stealing, sexual misconduct, and so on, are committed by people who may be feeling a sense of satisfaction at the time. The demarcation between positive and negative is not whether it gives you an immediate feeling of satisfaction, but whether it ultimately results in positive or negative consequences. For example, in the case of wanting more expensive possessions, if that is based on a mental attitude that just wants more and more, then eventually you'll reach a limit of what you can get. You'll come up against reality. And when you reach that limit, then you'll lose all hope, sink down into depression, and so on. That's one danger inherent in that type of desire. So I think that this kind of excessive desire leads to greed, an exaggerated form of desire based on over-expectation. And when you reflect on the excesses of greed, you'll find that it leads an individual to a feeling of frustration, disappointment, a lot of confusion, and a lot of problems. When it comes to dealing with greed, one thing which is quite characteristic is that although it arrives by the desire to obtain something, it is not satisfied by obtaining. Therefore, it becomes limitless, and that leads to trouble. The true antidote of greed is contentment. If you have a strong sense of contentment, It doesn't matter whether you obtain the object or not. Either way, you are still content.
So how can we achieve inner contentment? One method is to obtain everything that we desire. All the money, houses, cars, the perfect mate, and the perfect body. The Dalai Lama has pointed out the disadvantage of this approach. Sooner or later, we will run up against something we can't have. The second and more reliable method is not to have what we want, but to want what we have. Each of us has the ability to make a conscious decision to limit the things that we want and to learn to acknowledge and appreciate what we already have. Another source of happiness closely linked with contentment is a sense of self-worth. And the Dalai Lama has very personal views on what we should base our sense of self-worth and how this helps one contend with upheaval and misfortune.
Now, in my case, suppose I had no depth of human feeling, no capacity for easily creating good friends. Without that, when I lost my own country, when my political authority in Tibet came to an end, becoming a refugee would have been very difficult. While I was in Tibet, there was a certain degree of respect given to the office of the Dalai Lama, and people related to me accordingly, regardless of whether they had true affection for me or not. But if that was the only basis of people's relation towards me, then when I lost my country, it would have been extremely difficult. But there is another source of worth and dignity from which you can relate to other fellow human beings. You can relate to them because you are still a human being within the human community. You share that bond. And that human bond is enough to give rise to a sense of worth and dignity and can become a source of consolation in the event that you lose everything else. Generally speaking, you can have two different types of individuals. On the one hand, you can have a wealthy, successful person. If that person's source of dignity and sense of worth is only material, then so long as his fortune remains, maybe that person can sustain a sense of security. But the moment the fortune wanes, the person will suffer because there is no other refuge. On the other hand, you can have another person enjoying similar economic status and financial success, but at the same time, that person is warm, affectionate, and has a feeling of compassion. Because that person has another source of worth, another source which gives him or her a sense of dignity, another anchor, there's less chance of that person becoming depressed if their fortune happens to disappear. Through this type of reasoning, you can see the very practical value of human warmth and affection in developing an inner sense of worth.
The Dalai Lama points out that self-satisfaction, immediate gratification, is not always a reliable indicator of whether desire is positive or negative. This is linked to his views on the nature of pleasure.
Now, sometimes people confuse happiness with pleasure. For example, not long ago I was speaking to an Indian audience at Rajpur. I mentioned that the purpose of life was happiness. So one member of the audience said that Rajneesh teaches that our happiest moment comes during sexual activity. So through sex, one can become the happiest. So he wanted to know what I thought of that idea. I answered that from my point of view, the highest happiness is when one reaches the stage of liberation, where there is no more suffering. That's genuine, lasting happiness. True happiness relates more to the mind and heart. Happiness that depends mainly on physical pleasure is unstable. One day it's there, the next day it may not be.
Every day we are faced with numerous decisions and choices, and try as we might, we often don't choose the thing that we know is good for us. This is related to the fact that the right choice is often the difficult one, the one that involves some sacrifice of our pleasure. Over the centuries, a legion of philosophers, theologians, psychologists, and researchers have struggled to define the role that pleasure should play in our lives, But none of us really need dead Greek philosophers, 19th century psychoanalysts, or 20th century scientists to understand pleasure. We know it when we feel it. The touch of a loved one, the luxury of a hot bath on a cold afternoon, the beauty of a sunset. But there is also pleasure in the frenetic rhapsody of a cocaine rush, the ecstasy of a heroin high, the revelry of an alcohol buzz, the bliss of unrestrained sexual excess, the exhilaration of a winning streak in Las Vegas. These are also very real pleasures that many in our society must come to terms with. Although there are no easy solutions to avoiding these destructive pleasures, we do have a place to begin. The simple reminder that what we are truly seeking in life is happiness. As the Dalai Lama points out, that is an unmistakable fact. If we approach our choices by keeping that in mind, it is easier to give up the things that are ultimately harmful to us, even if they bring momentary pleasure. Frame any decision by asking yourself, will it bring me happiness? That simple question can be a powerful tool in helping us skillfully conduct all areas of our lives. Approaching our daily decisions and choices with this question in mind shifts the focus from what we are denying ourselves to what we are ultimately seeking, a stable and persistent happiness. With this perspective, it's easier to make the right choices because we are acting to give ourselves something, not denying or withholding from ourselves, an attitude of moving toward rather than moving away, an attitude of embracing life rather than rejecting it.